I'm John Batchelor with my colleague and friend Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow of Foundation for Defense of Democracies. He keeps a long word journal. And one of his many gifted reporters is John Hardy of FDD, who joins us. We move from the slugging it out in the Kursk salient or the incremental advances by the Russians, overwhelming the Ukrainian ability to hold off the Russians, to the air war. Ukraine drone hits Russia high-rise building 1,000 kilometers from the front line. This is in Kazan, Russia. Ukrainian drone strike deep into Russian territory. Most recently, I think there was another oil refinery hit. But the photograph of the plane, of the drone plowing into that high-rise, reminds everybody of it, the original 9/11. Ukraine continues to harass Russia civilian life as well as the military life. John, these reports, perhaps there's some falsehood, but it certainly does look like they're throwing drones against civilian targets. Has that changed in any way the battlefield or the statements from the Kremlin? Early on in the war, this all would have been regarded as out of bounds for a military.
Yeah, so I can't exactly comment what the Ukrainian target was for the most recent drone strikes. I think it's important to keep in mind that drones don't always hit their intended targets, whether it's because of spoofing or whatever. Without knowing exactly what happened here, I'll just say that Ukraine has been attacking Russian military targets such as ammo depots, also critical infrastructure like oil depots. And I think Ukraine has achieved a lot of tactical success with those strikes, a lot of individual successful strikes. To my mind, I don't think it's really added up to something that has achieved significant operational or strategic effects on the war. But Ukraine does continue to try to improve its indigenous drone and increasingly also kind of rudimentary missile capabilities. So it's possible that as time passes, Ukraine's long-range strike capabilities and capacity will increase.
What about this? AP is verifying that the residential building in Kazan was hit by a drone 600 miles from the front line. Is that something that Kyiv has made announcements about, that we're going to hit residential buildings?
I don't think they're trying to do like a World War II style morale bombing type of campaign. I think they will probably going after a military industrial target or something of that nature, and happen to hit an apartment building if indeed that's the case.
Bill, you have a question.
Is there any indication that these long-range strikes have put the pressure on Putin to come to the negotiating table, or have these strikes hardened the Putin and his cadre to continue the fight?
So I think the Ukrainian strikes on Russian oil infrastructure, and not just within the past few weeks, but kind of since Ukraine started doing that, have probably contributed to a Russian desire to find a way to end those strikes. So we've seen the two sides reportedly engage in very quiet diplomatic talks about possible moratorium on strikes against energy infrastructure. Those talks appear to have broken down first after Ukraine invaded Kursk Oblast, and then when reportedly after its first ATACMS strike in Russia in November, the talks were broken off again, according to press reports. So it seems that Moscow is a bit more worried about the oil side of things for the ATACMS and Storm Shadow strikes against military industrial targets. To my mind, again, kind of the same trend, some very impactful, tactical level impacts of strikes, not a whole lot of kind of aggregation to operational effects. And I think one reason for that is if you look at what Ukraine has struck, it's kind of mixed up the targets a lot. It doesn't seem to be going after, so you had one command post struck, you had some air defense sites struck, some airfields, maybe another ammo depot, things like that. And so it's not kind of a unity. I don't know if there's a coherent kind of strike campaign plan to focus on one area, focus your limited number of missiles on one area and kind of achieve more significant effects there. It seems kind of a scattering of the effort. And so that could be a reason why it's not being as successful.
A question about NATO. Mr. Trump has said, his weeks away from being president of the United States, that he wants our NATO partners to increase their defense investment to 5% GDP, which would be a considerable change from the status quo today. Has there been a negative or positive response from NATO's headquarters or any of the individuals about that assertion?
So I don't know about 5%. I do think that, sometime in the not so distant future, NATO will increase the target to 3. I think that there seems to be increasing consensus that that'll be necessary. And, you know, of course, some allies still haven't gotten to 2. So, you know, they'll have to be kind of persuaded and cajoled to do that. And then, so, you know, I think 5% is probably a ways off. I don't think we are even at 5%. So that strikes me as a bit unrealistic. But 2 or even 3% seems to me like probably the right target. And, of course, you know, countries will have to be will have to actually meet it.
Has Kremlin responded to that? Because that certainly does support the Kremlin opinion now and again that this is war with NATO, not with Ukraine.
I haven't seen a Kremlin statement on the 5% thing. I think, you know, the Kremlin can say what it wants about, you know, NATO aggression against Russia. But ultimately, the important thing is for NATO countries to have the means to deter and defeat aggression. So, you know, we have to put that priority before whatever the Kremlin, however the Kremlin's going to spin it.
Bill, you have a question.
John, the U.S. has given Ukraine a lot of weapons and munitions from its stockpiles. Is there any indication that the U.S. has increased manufacturing sufficient enough to both provide new weapons and munitions to Ukraine as well as replenish our stocks?
I think in some areas we made pretty significant progress. So, for example, in 155 millimeter artillery shells, I think the goal is, you know, they're maybe at like 50K right now, up from 14K per month when the war began, with the goal of getting to 100K sometime next year. So to my mind, that's pretty significant progress. And it would, you know, enable Ukraine to really kind of even the score with Russian artillery fire. And I think it allow us to kind of do that without dipping further into our own stocks, which is important. And, you know, whenever the war does end, I think that higher rate of production will be really useful for replenishing our own stocks. Whether we can kind of do the same at both at the same time, you know, I don't know. I'm not an expert on what the Pentagon requirements are for their different plans. Those, of course, are not made public, those requirements. And so I don't exactly know where they need to be from where they are right now.
We've got about 30 seconds left, John. So we go to the ages. General Frost, any change from last week? Any indication that January and February will be more difficult than last year?
Yeah, so I think it's going to be a tough winter. It seems like a pretty cold one. And so, of course, that'll have an impact on the battlefield. Might have already slowed to a degree some Russian attacks. And, of course, with the energy situation, the weather will be a big factor. If it's really cold, that will make the blackouts, you know, more intense and kind of the effect of those blackouts more intense, rather.
So the word now is that this is a cold winter in Europe. Is that correct?
I'm no meteorologist, but to just sitting here in Washington and looking at weather reports, it seems like kind of a cold one. But, you know, we'll see how it develops.
John Hardy, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Bill Raggio, my colleague and co-host, FDD, keeping the Long War Journal.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,